It is a pleasure to have both of them here. Please welcome Brian Robinson and Theron Johnson.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I thought we'd start with just the title of the evening and then just talk for a couple of minutes about whether Georgia is still a swing state when it comes to the presidential contest. Theron, I'll start with you. Yesterday, SurveyMonkey, which was doing surveys for NBC, listed Georgia as one of the states that was still, and their quote was, in play. In other words, Trump's still ahead, but Clinton within striking distance. Yet we haven't seen either campaign really throw a lot of surrogates or money, even in this final week, at Georgia. Do you think we're still in play?
I do. And I think the thing is that we got to remember Georgia demographically is already a quote-unquote blue state. I mean, we are a state that is growing every day with a lot of people who are moving here from liberal states like California, New York. And it's been duly noted that the demographic growth, particularly around African Americans and Latinos in the state, is at an all-time high. The other sign that I see, Dennis, is that if you look at early vote numbers, we are performing at a higher rate in Georgia than we performed in 2012. Now, many may say, and I'm just here to warn people, you know, we're not going to see the enthusiasm that we saw in 2008 and 2012 because there will never be another President Barack Obama.
And President Obama has said in North Carolina, especially, he's very concerned about African-American turnout in the early vote. And you just mentioned Georgia's early vote. What are we seeing there as far as the president's base here coming out for Clinton?
Well, I think what you're seeing is that African-American women, which I believe is the strongest voting bloc for the Democratic Party in any state.
And also the biggest portion of your fan base. I mean, you ought to see the tweets that we're both on.
But yes, Brian, I do have very beautiful and capable and strong women. Reliable voters who support my instincts and my delivery and our policy positions. But no, back to your point, Dennis. So look, I join Mayor Reed in saying that, yes, we need more resources. The amount of money that's been spent in Georgia is the most that has been spent in 2008 and 2012. So more money has been spent in Georgia than was spent in 2008 and 2012. The reason why I think that we're still hopeful is because moderate to Republican educated women are not comfortable with Donald Trump. And I think they're taking a second and a third look at Hillary Clinton. And I think ultimately we're going to see on Election Day that that particular group is going to surprise Georgians because I think they're going to vote for Hillary and not for Trump.
Does everyone remember the 2014 non-Perdue and Carter deal runoffs? That's because it didn't happen. It didn't happen, even though all the media polls showed deal below 50, Perdue below 50, and we were going to a runoff. For whatever reason, media polls in Georgia oversample Democrats, and they do it cycle after cycle. And as a Republican communicator, let me tell you what really frustrates me is I'm sitting there going, you guys are wrong every year. You're wrong every year. You're wrong on this. And they just sort of pat me on the head. Oh, poor Brian's in denial. And it doesn't matter how often I'm right. It doesn't matter how often I prove I'm wrong. We keep coming back to this. It's a horse race in Georgia. It's not a horse race in Georgia. I do think that there was an opportunity to, like, peel off these moderate Republican women in the donut counties, the counties where Marco Rubio did very well in the primaries, DeKalb and Cobb and Fulton. But she's been such an atrociously bad candidate that she has not moved those Republicans who are disaffected with our nominee.
If we're watching and listening on Tuesday night and you're looking at the map of Georgia and you're trying to see, okay, where am I going to be looking to see which way this is actually going? Brian, where would you start?
I think if you see higher turnout than normal in rural Georgia, that's really good news for Trump because you're seeing some of these new registrations you're seeing in Georgia, there's been a significant number of white voters over age 65. I mean, shocking. Who would have thought there was a big trove of them out there that weren't registered to vote? But there are.
Folks over 65 are very reliable voters, usually.
Usually. But I think Trump is appealing to a certain demographic
who haven't voted before,
that have been sort of alienated from the political process. They feel like they don't have a role to play, that feel like they've been left behind and left out. And he somehow is speaking to that group and appealing to them and getting them to the polls. So if you see huge turnout in rural Georgia where he's going to probably outperform Romney, that's going to be a really good sign for him. Take a look, though, at how Trump compares to Romney in Cobb, DeKalb, Fulton, Gwinnett. That's going to be the real trick here. Those are the only counties that Trump did not win in our primary.
The counties I'm going to be looking at on election night, the number one county is DeKalb County. DeKalb County is the most Democratic county in Georgia. Of course, I'm going to be looking at Fulton, Cobb, and other places. But to Brian's point, I'm going to go rural Georgia, but I'm going to go over to Augusta, Georgia, Richmond County, and Savannah, Georgia. These are Democratic cities that have voted once before for a Democratic congressman and John Barrow. If turnout is high there, I feel very comfortable. And then the next place I'm going to look, Dennis, is that I'm going to go to places like Rockdale County, which is a growing county, Forsyth County, which we know the history of Forsyth County, but it's a county where people are moving there in Fayette County because of the school systems. And then lastly, where I'm going to look to really see that Hillary Clinton and Jim Barksdale are on their way to victory is to really look at.
You couldn't even say it with a straight face.
I did.
I
just looked at you. Let me repeat that. The third place I'm going to look is into some of these counties that Brian mentioned, which are Cobb and Gwinnett.
Let's pick up on something else that's on the ballot, and it's not statewide, it's local. Right here in Atlanta, for instance, there's a transportation improvement local option sales tax. There's also the MARTA expansion local option sales tax, which would fund expansion at least within the city. Let's go back to 2012. There was a major statewide effort to pass T-SPLOS in regions.
Yeah.
Is this an effort to really lay the groundwork to bring that back again? In other words, look what Atlanta did. It's going to have more transit, more transportation improvements. Of course, we need to expand that beyond the boundaries of Atlanta. Is that going to be the argument if this passes?
Well, I'll go first. When I ride around the streets of Atlanta and I go east or I go west or I go north and south, I see signs and I talk to people who support expanding MARTA, and they support the T-SPLOS. What was interesting, the other day, I went up to the Atlanta Athletic Club, Johns Creek, and along my path, I saw vote no on T-SPLOS. And so that really concerned me, because the folks who live up in Johns Creek are the people who are in traffic the most coming to Atlanta trying to work or pick up their kids or enjoy the wonderful nightlife that we have here and the arts and the entertainment community and et cetera. But what gives me hope, different from 2012, Dennis, is this. When I see state senators like Brandon Beach, who's a Republican, who quite frankly doesn't get the credit he deserves by breaking ranks with the Republican Party, who for a long time has been against expanding transit in this region and in the state. But when he can go and introduce a bill to expand MARTA and to do something about transit and have a Republican challenger say that he's not conservative enough because he wants to do something with transit and he gets reelected, I think that there are more Brandon Beach-like voters up in North Fulton than we're giving them credit for. When I see mayors like Rusty Paul, who is the mayor of Sandy Springs, coming out and saying, listen, my district, my city is becoming younger. Millennials are moving here and they want to work here. We've got to do something about transit. We've got to do something about expanding MARTA. To me, Dennis, that's the difference in the evolution of the voters, particularly in North Georgia, who I think ultimately will vote yes in this T-SPLOS and MARTA bill will pass.
So, Brian, strategically, do you think this is kind of a trial balloon, that this is an idea of bringing back that 2012 notion that failed and say, okay, it's 4 years later, traffic is worse, let's try again on a much bigger scale?
it is kind of a do-over. We need the money. That's why we had it on the ballot to begin with. Let's not forget that in 2012, that was put on the ballot by a Republican General Assembly that was battling a fiercely anti-tax voting base. And remember, 2012 was still really bad. I mean, the Great Recession wasn't over. Most people in Atlanta were underwater with their homes. The unemployment rate was still over 8% here. I remember because I just was shocked beyond belief that President Obama won re-election with national unemployment still that high. And there was a tremendous push against any tax increase because at that juncture, you know, the Tea Party still had a lot of juice, which has sort of fizzled out now. This Trump faction is different than the Tea Party. It is a different group of folks. I mean, there's some crossover, but they're not saying the same things for sure. So it is a do-over because we need the money. Lord knows we're all sick of sitting in traffic. And I think that, you know, MARTA's doing a pretty good job. CEO of MARTA has done an excellent job. I mean, he's really cleaned it up. It doesn't smell like urine anymore.
See, hold Paul. See, that's where he loses me. He compliments the man, then you're going to say it smells like urine. Come on, Brian.
I'm saying it doesn't smell like urine.
But you don't have to say it smells. They just say he's improving MARTA. Like I'll tell you,
this is the challenge.
I mean, he's a fellow bald-head brother. I'm trying to defend us. You know, we got to stick together.
This is where the editing gets to be so much fun.
I'm sorry.
This is the challenge for Keith Parker and for MARTA. I was coming home from the Falcons game on MARTA on Sunday, and as we pulled into my station, someone was violently vomiting in the car from having overconsumed in the Georgia Dome, presumably.
How is that MARTA's fault?
I don't know, but that doesn't happen in my car.
Are you blaming that on Arthur Blank by serving too much alcohol?
There were no homeless people in my Honda and no one throwing up. And that's sort of the challenge that MARTA faces. People get on and they have those experiences and they're like, oh,
but how is that MARTA's fault, Brian?
I don't know. What do you? I don't know what you do, but you.
So you want?
It's a problem.
So you,
it's a problem with perception.
Here we go. As a Republican, you want them to ban all people who look like they may be drunk from MARTA because they're going to ride to their cars and vomit in it.
I think that there should be a coffee car and there should be a "you're so drunk you may vomit" car somewhere.
But again, I don't know how that's MARTA's fault.
Yeah. Those are just two good ideas.
I think we took the scenic route, to use a transportation metaphor.
Sorry.
Let's try to tie this up just a little bit. But are you saying, Brian, that should this pass, we will see, once we get a new legislature convened, that we're going to see more efforts to bring back something like that big, broad, regional or statewide transportation project plan that was attempted in 2012.
I hope we never again do something so ill thought out and unwieldy and ridiculous as what we did in 2012. That was a compromise that was all they could get through during the Great Recession. And it showed because it was not well done and people rebelled against it. And you had counties thrown in together that didn't really belong together. You know, there needed to be a much tighter Metro Atlanta group because your vote's going to get really hurt down in Fayette and in Cherokee. You know, you're just going to get hammered in those places. So they should have kept it a lot tighter. I think for now it's got to be county by county. But at some juncture, and this is my holy crusade. This is if I ever run for governor, it's going to be on this. It is absolutely insane that we have 159 county governments a system built on the 1790 transportation system, so you can get to the courthouse in a day on your horse to pay your taxes. that's still the prevailing system is absolutely inefficient, outrageous. If conservatives and Republicans want smaller government. Let's do away with all these county governments and consolidate them into something that makes a lot more sense so that we can have regional solutions to regional needs. I mean,
but there's still
Atlanta
the push
to,
in North Fulton
I would
to form
rather be
another
beaten
county.
With an aluminum bat than drive from here to Gwinnett County at 5:30.
Theron, real
there,
quickly.
There goes the 2016 disaffected Republican again trying to take away local control from county. Here's the bottom line with 2012. And I'll be quick, Dennis. I know you want me to rush.
Yeah, we want to open it up.
It was a bipartisan effort that had great intentions to create what you called a metro T-SPLOS and then a statewide T-SPLOS. There was a very ambitious project list that was released. The challenge is that there wasn't enough time to educate the voters. At a time where Brian likes to say, oh, we were doing, you know, going through a recession that, by the way, George W. Bush created. But Barack Obama at the time was doing the best to lead us out of that recession. But the problem was the education phase of what actually the voters would be receiving by voting yes. The thing that, again, gives me so much encouragement, and Brian knows that I would do this when it's fairly due, is compliment Republicans when they do the right thing. State Representative Jan Jones, again with State Senator Brandon Beach, worked in a very bipartisan manner to get MARTA on the ballot and to basically allow the Atlanta voters and the region to vote on T-SPLOS. When I see Republicans and Democrats coming together, and I'm a voter, other voters are seeing that things are getting done under the Gold Dome, and I think they'll be much more receptive to a project list that they feel educated about.
I absolutely agree with that. Can I just say, I absolutely agree with every word he just said.
Now, watch this. He's going to disagree with me in less than 15 seconds.
Robert Jones back there, who is in with our community engagement department, is going to holler out your questions.
This comes from Andrew. There's been plenty of hyperbolic predictions from both sides about what will happen to the country if the other candidate wins the presidential election. What do each of you honestly think will happen if the other party's candidate wins?
Yeah, and maybe localize it too. You know, start with Georgia and work your way out.
No, it's a great question. I mean, I think the bottom line is this. You know, Donald Trump, when he announced in June of last year, Brian and I both thought that it was no way, no how that this gentleman was going to this gentleman was going to be the Republican nominee. What Donald Trump did is that he picked up on something that he failed to do in 2012 when he really launched his campaign then on the birther issue. And he realized that people like Speaker Boehner, Paul Ryan, Mitch McConnell, and others, the establishment Republicans in Washington, had totally alienated a sector of their party. If Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, I think the country would go back probably 5 to 6 decades. And let me just tell you why. I've never seen someone who has been more divisive and has alienated so many demographic groups and was nominated by a party that he is working to destroy. And so, again, I go back to what President Obama said today. If someone is trying to destroy our democracy now, while they're running for office, when they get to the White House, they're only going to be more of that person that we've seen through this election. If someone has a history of disrespecting women and making very, very inappropriate comments about them time and time again, that doesn't change when you go into the White House. And then lastly, what makes me feel that we would be so divided is that he's already talking about, you know, he's even talking about sending his opponent to prison without due process and no evidence, really, of criminal action. I mean, this is the guy who has based his whole entire campaign on dividing the country. If Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, he will not only destroy the legacy of President Barack Obama, but he would destroy the progress that we've made in this country and every presidential legacy that has come before him. That's how bad I think it would be.
Before I get to Brian and the prospect of a Clinton victory, let me just ask you real quickly, because Democrats have complained since President Obama took office that Republicans in Congress have made it their mission that his presidency fail. Can Democrats, with a President Trump, take the same position without looking like, okay, now we're the obstructionists?
Well, that's just the point. I mean, one of the reasons why, again, Donald Trump was created is because the Republican Party created him. You know, it's a no-brainer, and it's not something that people don't need to look far to find that the approval of members of Congress has consistently been the lowest out of any person running for office in any of the states in our country. But when Mitch McConnell went on television and said that his sole responsibility was to make sure that President Barack Obama was not reelected in 2012, that was the beginning of the divisiveness that Donald Trump, I think, is the beneficiary of, began. Now, do I think Democrats will do the same? And it's not going to happen. Donald Trump is not going to be our president. But if
Brian said he wasn't going to be the nominee.
Yeah. But Brian is not going to say.
With certainty, I said.
Brian is not going to say that he's going to be the president, next president of the United States either. He won't say that publicly. Maybe privately when he sees a FBI director, you know, release some information about non-factual emails that he can't really, you know, point to Hillary Clinton. He may get a little excited at home. But the challenge is, I think that Democrats, who we are at our core, Dennis, we are not people who adopt this divisive type of methods and tactics to divide the country. Most Democrats are Democrats because we believe that we are the tent of the we're the big tent. We accept everyone. We don't discriminate on Muslims, Americans. We don't discriminate on women. We don't refer to African Americans as colored people. We are people who and the biggest thing that really, I think the Republicans just started going way to the right is when this country evolved, and not only the Supreme Court ruled it in favor of it, but the country has evolved around marriage equality. And to me, marriage equality is the one issue that I saw the beginning of the demise of the Republican Party, because we talk a lot about these millennial voters and we talk a lot about these independent voters. And I believe that they don't really care who someone chooses to love. If you want to love someone, love is love. But when you still have Republicans out here criticizing people because of their sexual orientation or their choice of who they want to marry, to me, I just don't see Democrats pushing back in the way that Republicans have. And then I'm just going to say, I've been waiting to say this, largely this pushback against Barack Obama was because he was an African American. I mean, we just got to say it, Dennis. It is racism in this country. Brian and I are friends because we're able to have very tough conversations about race. And he texted me the other day about a particular person who was African American who he did not feel comfortable with. And we had a very open, honest conversation about it. And believe it or not, I love white people. There's some good white people. But there are some bad white people. And when I get mad at white people, not you, Dennis, I call Brian and I say, why are these white people treating me this way? but until we accept that a lot of the unfair criticism, we do. But, and I know I'm going over, but just bear with me. Until we as Americans accept that a lot of the unfair criticism that President Obama received is largely because he's black. And when you accept that white women in particular say, you know what, I'm going to vote for this black man because he's the most qualified to be president, and we leave the fact out that he's going to go down in history as one of the most ethical, scandal-free presidents in our time. And so I just think that when you ask me the question of what the Republicans did, they made a fundamental decision that said that we're going to destroy this competent, qualified, educated, you know, black man who was raised by his white grandmother, who was born in Hawaii, who went to Harvard, who went to Columbia, who has served his country in a public service way, and we're going to defeat him and people reelected him. That was the beginning of Donald Trump.
Brian, there's a lot there.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is. But it's off the question because I'm supposed to answer about what happens if Hillary becomes president.
What? Yeah. Let's start with that, and then.
Yeah.
What?
Because I do think there's probably some element of truth, and I do think there's some reaction to President Obama being African-American, that being some element of it. And I see it when Theron and I do stuff on air together and we see the comments and Theron will go, you watch, somebody's going to use the N-word. And I'm like, nobody uses the N-word. And then sure enough, somebody uses the N-word. And it's just, it's shocking. And it, and that's been eye-opening for me to see that, because that has actually happened with the two of us together. And that doesn't happen to me. I mean, or any other...
Well, yeah. They won't use it.
No one has called
some
you?
Some other slur, yeah. Whatever it would be.
They do say you look like Tim Kaine. That's the only thing.
Yeah, I do.
He does look like Tim Kaine. I do hear that. The sisters love that you look like Tim Kaine.
Dude, Tim Kaine is my celebrity lookalike. And I'm so glad we can discuss it in front of an audience, because mentioning that on radio does no good. So this is perfect. You know, and that's what I'm excited about in the Clinton presidency is the opportunities it opens for me to be on Saturday Night Live, to do, you know, paid speaking engagements.
WikiLeaks.
The security detail that comes with it. If Hillary Clinton is president of the United States and the House stays Republican, which it will, because... Where the Trump closing in the polls really matters, because Theron's right. Trump is closing very tight. He's moving very fast, but there's still this blue wall. It's still very hard for any Republican to win. It's going to have to be somebody who really changes the game and changes the map. And Trump did pose some possibility of changing the map, of appealing to these blue-collar white people that perhaps hadn't been voting or perhaps had been traditionally Democrat union voters. But, and there is some element of that, but it's not a mass movement. There's not enough blue-collar white people to be a party. You know, the Republicans can become an economic populist party. They cannot become an all-white economic populist party. You know, that's just called a house party. You know, you can just kind of get them together. They can drink beer and be angry.
Country club.
It's not country club people. Those are my Republicans.
Those are Republicans. They keep it on Fox News. When I was at the Atlanta Athletic Club, I asked the guy, I said, has that television ever been on any other station but Fox News? He said, never.
Yeah. Theron's showing you how oppressed he is. Hanging out at the Atlanta Athletic Club.
Hey, man. Let Donald Trump tell it. We all are, our schools are bad. We're getting shot at.
You have nothing to lose. You have nothing to lose, right?
I'm a little little bourgeoisie. That's what you say.
Yeah, nothing to lose.
So, back to President Clinton.
Where Trump is closing in the polls, and why that really matters, even though his pathway is still very, very narrow, is that it will help the Republicans maintain control of both houses of Congress. And that's going to be vitally important to keep a check on Hillary Clinton. And what that's going to do is basically be a continuation of the last 4 years where we do absolutely nothing.
This comes from Omega, who asks the question of the next 4 years. What do you think the demographics will look like in 4 years for the state of Georgia, and how will it affect the candidates elected nationally and locally?
When I see the demographic shifting, yes, it's going to benefit us as a party, because we do a better job than Republicans advocating to people of color. But I also think that we've got to have a twofold strategy. It's need to be a duality in the sense of making sure that we focus on white people. And if OSD goes down, it's largely because you're going to see a new coalition that was built. It's going to be a coalition of black, Asian, white, and Hispanic people who came together as one to vote against something they did not believe. Democrats, we've got to pay very close attention to those numbers. And I think that's the new coalition in Georgia going forward that I think ultimately will benefit us.
We have got to be the party of opportunity. We have got to be the party of innovation, and we've got to be the party of ideas and have the ability to get things done. One thing I'm really proud of as a Georgia Republican is that in Cleveland, at the 2016 Republican National Convention, one quarter of the African-American delegates to the convention were in the Georgia delegation, because we are making a sincere effort. We're falling short of where we need to be. We know what the demographic change here. The reason why we have so many more minorities moving into Georgia than in some of these surrounding states is because Nathan Deal has done such a great job of creating jobs.
Not by himself, though. But you got to give the mayor and others a little bit of credit, too, now.
Yeah. Yeah, somehow we haven't talked about the mayor's blue light scandal. How is that possible?
I was filibustering. Yeah. I'm trying to get to it.
But we've got to reach out, and I think Indian Americans are a great example. You've got so many who are in the medical profession, so many who are small business owners, very traditional Republican constituencies, and I see them at Republican fundraisers, and we can begin to grow in those. And I think as other minority groups begin to see, hey, you know, those guys are there and they're welcomed and they feel comfortable there, I think it'll change. America is changing. The party, the Republican Party, will change with it, or it will implode and be replaced by something else.
Please thank once again Theron Johnson, Brian Robinson.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you.